Saturday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Eastern, I have a workshop called Dealing with Rage, Your Health, and Yourself. This workshop is not a therapy event. It's just an educational and self-development workshop. But I really encourage you to take what you learn in this workshop and bring it into your therapy sessions. I think that that is always really helpful when we have adjunct work in between sessions. And so in this workshop, we're going to go over some realistic anger management strategies, not just like take a deep breath, although I'm a big fan of breathing, self-compassion practices, and it comes with a workbook that will help you kind of create your own actionable steps for change. Anger is something that we deal with a lot when it comes to our health, and it's something that no one really talks about. So I'm really excited to be doing this workshop. Again, that's March 9th, 2024. At 10 a.m. Eastern, and the link to sign up is in the show notes. Additionally, if you are a resident of Georgia or Florida, then I have a therapy group that is starting on April 1st, 2024. The workshop that I just mentioned a moment ago, that's for anyone. It's not therapy, but this is a therapy group and is open to residents of the states that I'm licensed in. So this group will be 12 sessions long weekly. They're 90 minutes and they are virtual. They're via video. And I'll be every Tuesday from 3 to 4:30 p.m. starting April 1st. It comes with a digital workbook and the group format is a little bit of education where I'll be starting each session with an educational component around things like grief and identity work, working through anger, guilt and self-blame, fear of your body. That's a big one that we'll probably talk about a lot. And symptoms like brain fog, physical pain, chronic fatigue, dizziness, all of that. We'll be learning some pain management techniques and skills and practicing those in a way that is genuine and hopefully will stick, because we can learn a lot of these things and then feel like we know it and then never do it or just feel like it doesn't work for us. And really, it might be that we didn't have that helping hand, that warmth throughout the learning process. I think that's kind of what happens a lot of the time is we're trying to learn something in our brain. We don't have any support around it. And then we kind of feel like we know it, but it didn't work for us because we didn't really have all of the follow through. And again, that follow through usually only happens when you have really warm, genuine support. So that's what I'm hoping to provide with this group. If you have out-of-network benefits with your insurance, then super bills will be provided. If not, then it's just a private paid group. And I want to offer a couple of bonuses as well. I'm calling them bonuses because if you live in Florida, this might not be feasible, but we're going to do an in-person meetup at the end of each month. And so that'll be 3 meetups in total, but that will be in Atlanta. If you're in Florida and you want to travel up this way for that, that would be amazing. But just know that that's not a requirement of the group. And it's really just an extra thing that I want to do because I think virtual work is amazing. And sometimes that in-person aspect can really just tie everything together. So that will be a bonus. And then another bonus session. And again, I'm calling this a bonus because it's not mandatory and it really depends on if you have someone you would want to bring with you or if they would even agree to attending. But at the end of the program, or maybe two-thirds of the way through, I haven't decided yet, there will be a session, a group session, where your family members can attend the group to learn about how they can better support you in your journey. So that's the group therapy program. And again, I will have a link in the description box below with more information for that. But if you're interested in either of those things, click those links or you can email me at destiny@destinywinters.com. The Chronic Illness Therapist podcast is meant to be a place where people with chronic illnesses can come to feel heard, seen, and safe. Listening to mental health therapists and other medical professionals talk about the realities of treating difficult conditions. This might be a new concept for you, one in which you never have to worry about someone inferring that it's all in your head. We dive deep into the human side of treating complex medical conditions and help you find professionals that leave you feeling hopeful for the future. I hope you love what you learn here, and please consider leaving a review or sharing this podcast with someone you love. This podcast is meant for educational purposes only. For specific questions related to your unique circumstances, please contact a licensed medical professional in your state of residence.
Well, why don't we start by kind of just reintroducing you and just kind of reminding people who you are and like where you work, what you do, and then more about this book and kind of what led you to write it.
Okay. So just jump in?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, I am a private practice therapist in Bellingham, Washington, and I'm licensed in Washington and Idaho. And I do a lot of different things in my practice, including EMDR, lifespan integration, mindfulness, lots of tools in the toolkit that I pull out depending on what the client wants and needs. But what I was finding that led me to write this book is that so many people were telling me, how do I know who I am? I don't know what I want. I don't know where I'm coming from. And a lot of times it's precipitated by a divorce, a bad relationship, graduation, illness, a change in the body, aging. So these changes can really shake us up, and people are seeking to have a sense of who they are regardless, that can help be their guidepost. And I looked around online and I couldn't find anything. And so I just put together all the tools that I've been using with folks in one place in the hopes that that would make it easier for people. So,
yeah, it's a compilation of kind of worksheets and mindfulness activities. And tell me, you know, when you were putting it together, was there like a specific types of exercises that you're drawn to, or like what makes this book kind of unique and special in your words?
That's a great question. Pretty much I just like grabbed everything I could think of that has been helpful. And so, you know, some people are worksheet people, some people are visualization people, some people are cut up cards and work with them people. And so my hope is that between I think there's like about 100 exercises. I haven't counted. Between all those, there's some ones that would speak to people. And then with all of them, they might either confirm or add to a person's sense of who they are.
Yeah. What's your favorite exercise?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many favorites. I like them all.
They're really good. I've skimmed through a lot of them. And like one of the ones that came up for me was our giveaway, which I know you said it's not your concept. It's Dr. Rachel Naomi Ruman.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that exercise a little bit, the giveaway?
Yeah, I love that idea. So what Rachel talks about is that in a lot of Indigenous communities, there's an idea that we each have a giveaway. And so, for example, trees house birds and provide oxygen and support the ecosystem. And humans are the only ones that don't really know what our giveaway is, and that it's our job as humans to help reflect back to each other who we are. And that once we can discover kind of what our giveaway is, then we can move from that space and we can have less burnout. We can choose jobs. We can choose friends and situations if we kind of know what brings us to the world and what lights us up. So for example, I've had a lot of jobs in my life. And what I discovered when I went through the work myself was that I think that my giveaway is seeing the best in people and helping them bring that out. So I've done that as a therapist. I've done that as a manager. I've done that as a students. I just didn't know until I really drilled down to kind of know, oh, okay, this is what I'm about.
Yeah, I like it. It kind of brought up the concept of we kind of demonize like codependency in this culture. And obviously codependency has, you know, a lot of negativity that comes along with it. But I think it gets twisted into this concept of you're not supposed to like everything is supposed to be, how am I trying to say this? Like, almost like we don't want to give away stuff, parts of ourselves, because then we kind of expect too much from others. Or, and I think the way that you bring this exercise into the book, it made me think, okay, let's just be intentional with like how we're giving away. Or you kind of accept to like, I give this away freely, but I don't expect anything in return. that you're also on the lookout for, but who does kind of nurture me in return. So you are looking for it, but at the same, but it's not this like hard expectation of, and if you don't do this in return for me, then you don't love me, or, you know, that was what came up for me as I was reading through that exercise.
Yeah. I like the way that you're seeing it, because one of the questions to explore in those exercises is, what is something that I love to do, even if it's not received or thanked? Because the giveaway comes from a place in us that's not about currency. It's a place about joy and spontaneity and feeling like you're in the right place at the right time and flow. And so it's not about exchange.
Yeah.
And I don't do my giveaway all day long. I'm a therapist. I'm a family member. And then sometimes I have my own time. So it's not about giving. It's not the giving treat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, as a tree, you're giving out carbon dioxide, but yeah, right. Carbon dioxide.
Yeah. I forget, but yeah.
And you're giving out oxygen, and you're needing to get that carbon dioxide in. And so
There
is a reciprocal, there is an exchange, but it's not the exchange of, it's not tit for tat. It's not, you have to do this for me, I do this for you. It just like, it's very symbiotic and it happens naturally. And I think in relationships that work really well, typically, and I say this to a lot of my clients, what's best for you should also be best for your family, your community, like the people around you.
Right.
So that, yeah.
And when we have that sense of who we are and what we're about, then we can choose those relationships. They're more intuitive, and we can show up in them as ourselves and not have to like morph into someone that we're not, which is exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you're living with a chronic illness and you need so much from people and you feel like a burden, that's a, you know, the main, probably the main theme I work with over and over again. If you don't know what it is that you also give, it's just like, oh, like I can't do the dishes. I can't make dinner. So like my partner does that every single night and I'm a bad partner because I can't also contribute it in that way. But what do you contribute? It might not be physical doing the dishes. It might not be even money. It might not be some of these monetary kind of things that are easy to see, but what do you give as a human?
And it might be appreciation, it might be humor, it might be, and all those things are a part of ourselves, whether or not our bodies are cooperating today. And it's really important with chronic illness to know what you're about so you can allocate your spoons. I'm sure you've talked about spoon theory on this podcast before.
I have it. I actually don't use spoon theory, but I just assume most listeners know what it is.
So essentially, how do you allocate the energy that you have? Who do you choose to be around? What you choose to do? That's why I kind of like there's a values exercise in here where there's like hundreds of values and you can cut them up and you can rate them. And then you can sort them by work, leisure, family, spirituality. And you can kind of... So then when you get an invitation to a party and your value is deep connection, and this is a cocktail party with people you don't know, maybe that's not a spoon you want to spend. And so it helps you come from a more centered place of making choices.
Yeah. You're making decisions that are right for you. And again, that typically means it's right for your family too, because when we take care of ourselves, even if someone else is upset by that decision, like they really wanted you to go to the cocktail party with them, ultimately you're going to be better off for you and for your family tomorrow morning when you have decided to stay home from something that is not really meaningful to you.
Yeah. And, you know, make agreements with your family that, I'll go. That's fabulous. I'll get recharged and tomorrow we'll do something different.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of the reasons, if it's okay, I can give you a kind of a story of how I learned this stuff the hard way. So years ago, I was director of a nonprofit organization. And in nonprofits, you report to a board of directors. So I had 12 bosses and they rotated. So they had requests and needs of me. I had staff that had needs and requests. We had 200 volunteers. We had 500 clients. There was the community that would call us and say, hey, you guys need to take care of this problem or that problem, because we were seeing, you know, nonprofits, that's what we do. And then we had funders who we would get grants or donations, and we'd have to prove to them that we were doing what they were hoping we were doing. So I had so many pulls on my time and attention. And I'm a people pleaser. And so it was like kind of a really intense learning experience. And it was starting to affect my body. I was starting to get sick. So there were a couple of things that I did to help. So one was by the phone, I wrote like a sign that had things that said, no, let me think about it. This is not our mission. Like any delay or stop messages, just to help me not be like, you're right, we should do that. Oh, you're right. There's a big need and I have to fill it. And then the staff and I got together and we created, we already had a mission, but we created a vision and a 5-year plan. And that helped so much because I could say, yes, that's an important need. The capacity that we have, we've made these plans and this is the impact we're going to make over the next 5 years. And that changed everything. And so this workbook is kind of like that, of sort of knowing what I'm about, what I want to give my time to, what I want to ask for, and being having some clarity. So, and then in chronic illness, you know, like you mentioned, so I'm sometimes I have energy, sometimes I don't. I'm still a therapist. I'm still a writer, even if my body's not cooperating. And beneath that, I'm still creative. I'm still resourceful. I'm still tenacious. I'm still funny. And I can't lose sight of those things on bad days with my body or for clients who are navigating the medical system and give up, right? It's really helpful to recall our dignity, our worth, our deservingness, so that we can navigate these barriers and get what we need. So that's my intention with chronic illness and with anybody, so we expend our energy in a way that works. Because if I said yes to all those people at work, the whole agency would have fallen apart.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, how do you know who to say no to and who to say yes to, guided by your values, guided by your life vision. And for people who are struggling to figure out, okay, well, like, what are my values and what are my visions, you have the value sorting exercise, but you also have this exercise that brings people back into what was happy about childhood, what they enjoyed in childhood. I love that. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. You know, not all kids, depending on the family that you grew up in. But many kids, even if they don't express it, know what they love, express themselves in ways without judgment. And so if we can go back to that, it can give us a really good clue about what we're into. And so I loved, you know, I loved jumping across creeks. That was one of my favorite things to do. So I'm a lot older now. I don't jump across creeks so much, but there's parts of that, of like challenging myself, of being in nature, of figuring out a puzzle of like, where should I jump? What would this look like if I... can I handle it if I fall in? You know, so there's pieces of that that are still a part of me, regardless of if I still do it.
I love that so much that it's, I think what you're just talking about was metaphorically jumping. Yeah. Like taking risks or,
Yeah. And I was a big reader. So, you know, I still love imagination. I still, and then I was a big crafter. So creating things has always been a part of my life, whether that's books or crafts or a good treatment plan with a client, you know, so there's little jewels that you can pull out of just what did you do when you were a kid?
Yeah. And I actually had this experience, and a lot of my clients do too, where we don't really remember a lot of our childhood. Mm-hmm. So grew up in, you know, an environment that kind of, it would be more beneficial to forget some of it. So for me, having my own child, that was a kind of a whirlwind. And relearning how to be a child again.
Oh yeah.
And you know, trying to embrace that. And when that happens, just for pure listeners, like, it's okay if grief comes along with that. But because it can do that. But I'm curious if there are any other exercises in the book or any ideas that you have for people who don't really remember their childhood and can't look back in that way currently.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. One is if there are people that you trust to just ask, what was I like? What did I do? So if there are siblings or someone that can be a reporter for you, that can be helpful. And then sometimes family stories can be really interesting, even if they were supposedly negative. So this is in the book too, the workbook. I gave a couple examples. So I know a woman who her family used to mock her, and they would call her oh gosh, I'm trying to think of the name because I don't have my book open. You know, the birds that steal things.
I
Oh,
don't. I don't
can I
know.
think of it? Okay, well, we'll just move on so people know how to listen to me fumble. But there is a bird that steals eggs from other people, from other birds' nests, and her family would call her that. And it was a very negative thing, because what she would do is she would take things from her siblings' bedrooms and she'd put them in little piles in her room. And that was kind of a negative story, and they made fun of her. However, when she became an adult, she became a spiritual director, and she's doing it in parts of the country where there's not a lot of options. There's like just certain kind of churches, but a lot of people who are kind of unchurched need something. And so she pulls from all the faith traditions and helps people create faith for themselves. And so she's always been a collector of shiny things. And while it was a negative story, it told a lot about who she was and what her giveaway is. So family stories could help. Even if you don't like them, there might be another side of them.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I meant. Like sometimes grief will come up. Sometimes you have to grapple with how do you see the what I can take, what I can get out of this story, even though there's this kind of negative piece to it. How do we work through that? Which therapy is a great avenue for that.
And
But
the
yeah.
other thing you can do now is just play and just see what attracts you. Like, not for the purpose of like, I have to figure out who I am, but just play. Do I like art? Do I like music? Do I like running? Like, you know, and then what is it about that? What is it about the art? Is it the colors? Is it the messages? Is it the and we can drill down. And there's some stuff around art in this book too that helps you kind of drill down to either art that you're attracted to or art you make. And then some questions that might help you understand why and who you are about that.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of art in session, or do you, is it more for like personally for yourself?
I do mine personally, but a lot of times clients will bring art to me, or we'll talk about a dream or a song they wrote. And I write poetry, which you and I have talked about. And I'll often look back and I'm like, oh, that's the message I needed to have. But I didn't know because oftentimes I have to read it to someone else and they're like, do you not see this? And I'm like, oh, okay. So art can be a lovely way of tapping into what we need to know and to hear.
That makes sense. Yeah. So you growing up, it sounds like you were out in nature a lot and had like a lot of was art encouraged for you, or was that something you did on the side away from like that wasn't encouraged, but you did it, or what was that like for you?
That's a good question. You know, I have one of those childhoods where I don't remember pieces of it too, but I do remember being taken to the library a lot. And so my assumption is that I gravitated to the art books, and then you know, my folks were happy to, you know, have me rummage through what we had for supplies and things like that. But I was lucky in that I got to explore that way.
Yeah, I love that you said, like, I would imagine. So even if you don't have these kind of core memories, this is kind of an example of how you can still pull from your childhood from more of like a felt sense, like, what do I think I was like? You know, it doesn't have to be accurate. Like, this is exactly what I did as a kid. It's more about this felt sense inside of you.
So, and there's imagery too, where you can kind of in the book, where you can kind of go to your child and have a chat with her and things like that. So, you can do that if you remember, or if you don't remember, it can just be imaginal and see what comes up.
Yeah. I'm finding a theme lately I've been talking a lot about with clients is how our chronic illness kind of mimics previous parts of our lives. So either sometimes it mimics childhood or it's someone is older than maybe it mimics like first 20 years of their marriage or you know, like the first part of their adulthood or something like that. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that concept.
I would like to hear more about that because that's a new idea. I'm really intrigued.
So I kind of, I don't know where this phrase is from, but there's a phrase that says how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so when it comes to how we cope with and manage our chronic illness, there's, of course, so many systems at play here. There's medical system that in the U.S. anyways, notoriously expensive and dismissive and doesn't really offer a lot of answers. So we deal with, like, there's that part that's out of our control. But when it comes to the pieces that are within our control, a lot of times the way we're navigating our chronic illness will show up the same way we navigated hardships in childhood or in that part of our adult life. And that can be a good thing or a negative thing. You know, it can be our maladaptive ways of coping, or it can be the strengths that we maybe always had as a child. And now it's showing up in our mindset or in our the way that we handle things now. And so a lot of times people, they'll feel so lost, right, when a chronic illness is consuming their life. But when we start to kind of relate it back to who they were before, even if they're, even if it is slightly negative or very negative, it still kind of starts that bridge, that connection to back to you, back to yourself. And then we get to explore that. And that can be really, really hard work, and it can be really eye-opening work. But just the concept, you know, your book, Back to You, is, you know, it made me think, like, that concept kind of just relates a lot.
Right. Yeah. So this might help in the work that you do and, like, who was I then?
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly what you said with the story of the girl and the bird, you know, it was a negative thing, but you can draw on that and use it for something positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm imagining, like, really stubborn kids, right? Like, they could use that trait when navigating the medical system or trying one more therapy or things like that, that could be seen as negative, but that's a trait that could be really helpful.
Yes, stubborn is the one that comes up a lot. And, like, especially my young adults, they have a really hard time with, like, thinking about how stubborn they are because they were told their whole lives, like, you're so stubborn. But it's such a strength when you're especially dealing with a chronic illness and trying to get through school. Like, you need that. You need stomach this. And it's determination, really, just without negative
conversation. And I think the flip side is true as well. And there's some sections in here and looking at core beliefs, because a lot of what comes up, at least in my practice around chronic illness, is, did I cause this? Is it my fault? It must be because I'm bad. Whereas, you know, as children, we make everything about us. And so we believe that everything that happens is our fault. And so when we start to fall into that as adults, we need to kind of unravel that. At least take away the extra suffering of, I have a symptom. And the extra suffering is, well, I must deserve it. I shouldn't be having it. I'll be judged for it. All those pieces we can work with. And a lot of them go back to just the core beliefs that we had as children. And those are workable.
That's, I think, a really good kind of synopsis of a lot of the work we do in therapy. When you see a therapist for chronic illness, it is a lot of these core beliefs and connecting your emotions and your pain, your physical pain. But, like, I had somebody ask recently, so does that mean, like, you're going to tell me that, like, my pain is a result of, like, my trauma or my emotions, like, cause? Like, no, but it is bidirectional at the same time. It play off of each other. And so there's connection there, but it doesn't mean it's your fault. Like, I'm stubborn, and therefore that's why I'm pain, you know, have achy knees. Like, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. It's a journey.
Yeah, it is. And there's nothing like pain or illness to encourage us to have the journey. So that's the the flip side is that a lot of these things we'd not be exploring if we weren't having a hard time. And so I wish that people weren't, and it's a lovely opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, like, yeah, that concept can feel really hard to hear when you're in the thick of it, that it can be, that there's a silver lining, but it's not that, yeah, like you said, it's not that we wish anyone has to go through this, but at the same time, here we are.
Right.
So let's use it to the best of our ability.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of my intention for writing this workbook was that so people don't get lost in the symptoms, because they can take over and we lose sight of everything else. And so my hope is that people, you know, have some kind of life raft to hold on to, even when the symptoms are big or even when they're feeling very discouraged, to not lose sight of that they are a human with dignity, who have gifts, who can make choices, who have some agency.
Yeah, I agree with that. Even outside of all of the systemic issues we deal with.
Yeah. And then, you know, when we do give, we're doing it from a place of less resentment, because we're doing it from the actual gifts that we have to give that gives us energy, rather than, like you were saying, that sort of codependent, well, these people helped me move, so I guess I better help them move, even though I have a back injury or something.
Right.
That's just a weird example, but where we can be like, hey, I have a back injury, but I would love to like cook you food on the other side, or however it is that exactly shines through you.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah, I think that really is it. I mean, a lot of times, and the concept of helping people move actually does come up a lot, because if you have chronic pain or illness, you really need that help, right? Moving is a lot. So moving like houses or apartments. So yeah, you might not be able to help somebody in return, but you definitely can, yeah, cook them dinner or take them to a movie or, you know, just be a listening ear for them. Sometimes that's all we can do, and that's all we need to do.
And it's an interesting thing to learn to receive, because our culture doesn't support that. And so, you know, I talk to people about like, when you know someone, you know, that's sick and you bring them food, or if you were feeling strong and you help them move, like, how do you feel? And most people feel really good giving, and they're really very uncomfortable receiving. And so we are giving people a gift if we can receive with generosity. And it's a really hard flip to make in your mind. And I still struggle with it, but what a gift to let someone give to you.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really hard to receive. I think we don't ever want to be indebted to people. And as soon as you receive something, yeah, it feels like, again, no, I'm going to have to go help them move because they helped me move. So I'd rather just do this all on my own.
But really, the person often that gives, they just get a lot of joy from feeling like they were helpful in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as we age and as our bodies change, it's something we have to learn.
Yeah. I will say, I live in the South, and I think that there's just, depending on where you are, there's like a hidden meaning behind a lot of words sometimes. So like, okay, let me let you go. You must be busy. And it's like, actually, they mean like, I want to get off the phone now.
Right.
That's been a pretty big adjustment. I still really struggle with that, because I'm very much like, I think I've learned to be very, very intentional with my words. So if I say, like, if I'm trying to hang up the phone, I'm going to say like, okay, well, I've got a lot to clean here, so I'm about to let you go so I can go do this. But I think so. I'm trying to remember what just made me jump to that thought train. But being intentional with your word, I think, is really important. And there's, you know, again, there's cultural aspects to this. If you're in a family where everyone understands, let me let you go because you're busy, really means I need to go, then it's probably fine if everybody understands that that's the language. But then when you start to bring in different cultures and different areas together, it can cause a lot of complicated communication, room for miscommunication. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that. But
that's okay. Well, I mean, I'm from the West Coast, so if you'd said to me, let me let you go, I'd be like, no, I'm fine, I have time. And then, right. You know, if you guys work on a generous, I don't know what we are over here, but we don't have those words. At least I don't know those words.
Yeah.
So then we're both hanging on and nobody wants to be on the phone.
Exactly. Yes, I know. So, yeah, I think being intentional with your word is really important. But, you know, again, if you're in a cultural space where that is deemed rude, well, then no, there's a lot stopping you from being intentional with your word. Mm-hmm. But, and also that's just a value of mine. It might not be a value of yours or someone else's. But this is all a part of, I think, it's just to kind of, I think what I'm trying to illuminate is how it really is complicated to figure out. It can be complicated to figure out who you are and what you want, because we do live with other people and they have opinions. And when everyone around you has opinions of one way and you have an opinion of a different way, it can cause a lot of tension and discomfort and anger. And I do think, like, at least a lot of the people I work with and I myself have had this experience of just, we tend to be the black sheep of the family. Mm. I don't know what it is, but, well, maybe that's because I don't think it's a chronic illness thing. I think it's just the people who end up in therapy were the ones who have never been heard before, like our whole lives being kind of misinterpreted or misrepresented. So we go to therapy to finally get that validation that we didn't really get growing up, which helped you figure out who you are. But then you also have to grapple with, okay, this is who I am, but this clashes with the rest of my family.
Yeah.
Where I live.
Yeah, that's kind of step two, isn't it? and kind of the idea of skill building around, you know, it's the idea, I wouldn't use it exactly like this, but no being a complete sentence, of like not over explaining, of simply saying that doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I know in my family, I'd say, well, I can't attend whatever because, and I'd make up some reason. Mostly I just didn't want to go. And so everything I would say, like, oh, I can't stay overnight because I have to work. Oh, well, you can leave at 6 a.m. Well, I can't do that because my car. And it would just be this endless conversation of my family trying to get me to do things. And so I had to learn just to keep saying, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. Because I got real clear on what I wanted and what was okay. Or I might say, yes, I will come visit you, but I will be there for one day rather than two, or whatever it was. But I needed to get real clear. And once I had that, then I didn't need to explain anymore, because they're going to feel how they feel regardless of what I say.
Gosh. Yeah. Conserve your energy.
Yeah.
I know. I grapple with that concept. The no, it's a complete sentence. I think when people have earned the right to hear your explanations, then use your energy in that way. You won't have to use energy.
Yeah.
You just explain and then they understand. But when people just are kind of hell bent on not, like, well, you could do this, so you could do that, then sometimes you just have to, no, I'm sorry.
Or if you cared, you would, or whatever. So yeah, I don't actually work with people on no being a complete sentence, but I do work on saying things like, that doesn't work for me, or do you have another idea, or things like that, that are still relational, but not going to harm me and my energy.
Right. Because again, if you give all your energy away and you're not getting enough in return to replenish, then you're no good for yourself. You're no good for anyone else. Like,
And that chronic illness will teach you that real quick.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So these are the things we grapple with. And yeah, your book, you know, I don't think it specifically speaks to chronic illness, but I know you work with it in your practice and that it's so related to everything you have written here, because all of these concepts do come up in therapy when we're working with chronic illness.
Yeah. And there's some pieces like there's a section in there about how our bodies know the truth and getting into our bodies and knowing what's true for us and what isn't. So in chronic illness, we tend to leave our bodies. And so I think it's extra important for those of us that might have pain or symptoms that we take off, then it's really hard to know what we want and what we're about. So yeah, a lot of these things one could adapt. Or there's a section of writing about what would you do if you weren't afraid? Once we've experienced, you know, strange symptoms or chronic illness, then it would be like, well, I don't want to get on a plane because I might have the symptom again. I don't want to. And our lives get very small. So if we can allow ourselves to think about what would I do if I wasn't afraid, then we can get a kind of a sense of what lights us up, what we're about, what, and then, you know, you can back into it. Okay, I'll fly with a friend. Okay, I'll take a day trip. And it's not really about the trips. It's really about what lights me up and what do I want to say yes to? That our world lives get so much smaller with chronic illness, we have to watch that. You know?
Right. Yeah, when you're doing this exercise, you know, remembering to take the shoulds out of it. Well, I would get on a plane because my family keeps bugging me to come see them. It's like, no, if you don't want to get on a plane, this exercise is about figuring, like, what would you do if you weren't afraid, and it's what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
I probably should edit that.
I mean, and that's the beauty of working with a therapist, I think, with a lot of these workbooks, this like discovery workbooks, because things like that do come up and you just can't capture everything on paper.
Yeah.
That's where some of the art exercises come in too. It's like, when you take this off of the just this piece of paper and you bring it three dimensional real life, your brain conceptualizes the answers a lot better.
Yeah. And then some of your belief systems or fears aren't there because you're just creating.
Yeah.
So you have a better window. And then sometimes it takes someone to, there are people, I know some like moms and daughters and some friends who both bought the book. And so they can do the exercises together and help give each other feedback. So people not in therapy might just use their community to see what someone else sees and what they've done. Because so then we're not in our own heads as much.
I love that. Yes, absolutely. Community is, at least in my life, it's very important.
Yeah. And people don't necessarily even have to buy a book. I mean, we're talking about different exercises. They could just try those with their friends.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's the whole point, right? Is like figuring out how to try things again without fear, or with fear, but doing it anyway and seeing what positive benefit you can gain from that.
Because if you think of like a camera lens, right, is with illness and fear, the lens gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And so taking those little risks to make it a little bit bigger to be, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that if I adapt it. Oh, I did do that, but I didn't like that. You know, of really trying to reclaim as much of our lives as we can when we're dealing with bodies that have their own minds.
Yeah, absolutely. What else feels relevant about just the book and the work you've been doing, and especially as it relates to kind of finding your way back to yourself and when you're living in a chronically ill body?
I think the word that kept coming up to me when I was thinking about this podcast is dignity. Of just really being able to sit, you know, with, I imagine it of like just sitting with a dignified posture and taking your time of like, I have a right to have care. I have a right to have love. I have a right to medical stuff, and sometimes the systems will, and our culture, will kind of strip that away. So I think the taller we can sit with knowing who we are, and even if I'm not using my gifts today, I have gifts. I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, and it's hard to get yourself there sometimes. I'm kind of skimming through the workbook now, and you talked a little bit about the core beliefs before, but if you're really struggling to figure out what it is you have to give or what it is like is meaningful to you, that's really why this workbook exists. I love that you mentioned like mom and daughter buying it together or friends buying it together. It doesn't have to be within therapy, and just being really honest with yourself and asking people to be honest with you and being honest with other people will help you gain clarity so that you can figure some of this stuff out.
Well, and a lot of it, like you were mentioning the core beliefs, a lot of things that come with chronic illness is, right, like I'm invisible, I'm not deserving, I'm unlucky. People who a lot of people will say God is ignoring me. I mean, how painful if you're a spiritual religious person to feel ignored. And all this stuff can pile on and make you feel so isolated and alone. So parsing those out, and I'm sure those were, you know, like you said, how you did childhood probably, or that, you know, in your family of origin, that being weak wasn't okay. I mean, my goodness, people with chronic illness are the strongest people. It's just that our culture doesn't recognize it. And so getting some clarity on ways that we are creating more suffering can help us lighten up a bit.
Yeah. Our society, it's really not strength that it says it prioritizes strength, but it's really productivity. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not leading to productivity, then you're called weak. But if strength is actually about how much you can hold at one time, I mean, living with a chronic illness, you're holding a lot.
Yeah. And you have, I mean, people who've suffered have a capacity for holding a lot for other people. They have a capacity to hold opposite ideas. They have, you know, this depth that is earned. And so do our elders. And we don't pay attention to that either. So,
yeah, very true. Do you have anything in the book about, you do have something about like a, like consulting your wise person, or I'm trying to remember exactly.
Yeah, there's a few different like meditations. So there is a meditation for, yeah, consulting a wise person to kind of help find your giveaway. There's a lovely meditation about visiting with your future self and having that and visualizing the life you would like to have and having that future self come back and give you advice. Because, you know, as we look backwards, right, all the things that we worried about for the most part are fine. Right. So go ahead and visit your wise elder in your future who's like, honey, it's okay. You'll get through this. It's temporary.
Absolutely.
And then one of my favorites is the I actually created this with a client on the fly, but is creating your support team. So we were talking about like in the movies where the team is going to go into battle, right? And they're doing that slow walk into battle, or they're doing the slow walk away from the explosion because they've just won. And so we did a visualization of who her support team would be. And I won't go into the specifics for her, but it was fabulous who she came up with. And so you can do your own visualization of your support team. And then what qualities does that support team have? Because you can't imagine these, you can't see the qualities if you don't have them. And so like in here, my examples in the book are Iron Man, who's innovative and fearless, and Oprah, who speaks the truth, and my dog, who's loyal and fun. So gather your team and spend time with them in meditation or in writing or imagination. And then if you're like going to have a medical procedure, have them walk behind you and slow walk into that procedure with them. And it's really quite amazing what support that gives. And other people will also do like ancestors or spiritual or religious figures, whatever you need. But they'll give you clues as to who you are and also support you.
Yeah, I love that so much. Especially just the imagery of like, yeah, slow walking after an explosion in a movie. I mean, it's just so poignant. We do an exercise like this in somatic experiencing, but it's much more like, I love that you like animated it and you brought it to life, because the way that I was kind of taught this exercise, like your nurturing team, you know, it's just like, I'm going to use it this way because it just brings it to life. And that's what we're trying to do when you live with a chronic illness. It feels like the life has been sucked out of you. And in a lot of ways it has. This is not to dismiss that, but we do have an ability to bring a lot of that back to life.
Yeah. And to think of these people at your back or your shoulders can really help feel less alone. And we can also sort of breathe in and really feel into the qualities that they have. There's an EMDR technique where you kind of merge with your resources and have them become a part of you. And so that's another thing you can do imaginally, or if you have an EMDR therapist, remind them of that. So.
Yeah. Can you explain that one a little bit more?
In that technique, you would if there's a situation that you need support with. So let's just say I'm going to get a surgery and I've had medical trauma. I would just write down all the care, all the qualities that I need to get through that. So I might need patience. I might need grounding. I might need support or whatever. You know, I may need faith that I'll get through it. Right. So then you take all those qualities and you create a picture of what that might look like. So who knows what that would be? For some people, it's a tree with really deep roots. For some people, it's like Rosie the Riveter holding flowers, whatever it is, the imagery that would represent that, those qualities. And then EMDR uses bilateral stimulation. And so using the bilateral stimulation, you imagine this image approaching you and then invite it to merge with you and feel it in your body and really get a sense of, which you would probably do somatically, of what's it feel like in your body? What does that posture hold while we're doing the bilateral stimulation, just to tap in and remind ourselves of those resources? And if we can imagine them, we have them somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And if you can't imagine it, I know it took me so, so long to learn how to do any kind of imagery work. Mm-hmm. And my mind would just go blank. Like, yeah. And so keeping in mind that if you don't know, if you can't, that's where really good practice, mentorship, therapy comes into play. Mm-hmm. And just being willing to keep trying, knowing it's a skill you can learn. Mm-hmm. You really can. But it might take a while.
Yeah. And it might just be a somatic sense or an idea. You know, maybe you imagine the words coming into your body and then feeling what that feels like. So you have to figure out what fine tuning each person needs to take it in.
Yeah. I think it's like just, you know, again, finding yourself, finding your way back to yourself. We, just, you know, with trauma, we just lose this ability to see, to feel joy, really. And so in a lot of these exercises, it's like this is helping to pull out that part of you that can sense joy. It's there mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you become a person who can hold opposites, right? Like this symptom is terrible and I'm suffering. And also, oh my gosh, it's a beautiful day out. This, I'm looking out my window right now and the sun's streaming through the trees. It's early autumn. There's also some fog. It's gorgeous. So to be able to hold both is like how we become full human beings.
Yeah.
Being productive is not how we become full human beings.
No, you're right about that. Yes. And learning to it's really not about productivity, but learning how to do a lot of these things has helped me be a more productive person, because the things that I'm producing are mm-hmm. so meaningful to me.
Yeah.
I'm just producing just to produce.
Yeah. I was just listening to Sharon Salzberg yesterday on a podcast, and she was mm-hmm. saying that her theme is, she had sepsis and she was learning to walk again. And she said her physical therapist said to her, it's not a race. Like the first time she walked, she's like, you'll get farther if you go slowly or you sit down. It's not a race. And that's been her theme ever since. Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. Learning. I was just talking about this with I can't remember who I was talking about this with, or maybe I posted about it on Instagram, but like just slowing down to speed up. Mm-hmm. And again, the goal is not about producing more or speeding up, because if you keep that goal in mind, you're kind of counteracting this, what the slowing down can do for you.
Yeah.
It's really just about embracing that slow down, which helps you learn better, helps your neural pathways be able to actually hold the lessons that you're learning. So that then when you do start to speed up, you're not feeling like you don't know what you're doing. You know, you're not lost. You actually have a lot of experience with the thing that you slowed down in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like learning to play an instrument, you get your form just right when you start so that you can build on that.
Yeah. And I also, that was probably the other thing about having a child, that kind of instilled that lesson for me. Like, you have to slow down with kids. I mean, they don't walk yet. They at some point, you know, when mm-hmm. they're not walking mm-hmm. yet, and they're not running. And then, you know, you watch them like fumble and fall so much And every time they do, you see the improvement. And I that's just been really eye-opening for me. Like, wow, what would it have been like if my whole life, you know, we were slowing down and like allowing for mistakes and not rushing to a finish line. You know, a lot of us didn't get that experience before, but we can definitely recreate it now.
Yeah.
Children or no children.
Well, and children, sorry about the dog, and I mean, you may be able to hear, but you know, and children and dogs, right? Nobody says you should be productive. At least toddlers, they don't.
Yeah, well,
they're valuable. They know who they are. They know what they want.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So what lovely teachers.
For sure. Yes. Dogs are definitely a great teacher in that too. Especially, I have a very stubborn dog. Very smart and stubborn. So training him took, I mean, it was at least a year and a half of like consistent, daily, persistent, slow repetitions over and over and over again. You know, we'll teach you. And if something's important enough to you, which training him was super important because I live in a big city and it's just important that he's listening well. That was so important to me. It was worth the frustration. I think that's just the big piece of all of this is it's not about finding yourself because someone told you that's what you need to do. It's like, we really want to know what's important to you because that's what's going to give you the strength to keep going.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are you, like a motivational interview idea of what's important to you? Why would you want to get another medical treatment? Why do you want to eat better? Not for the sake of never having donuts, but maybe I want to play on the floor with my grandkids.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus on.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, is there anything else that comes to mind that you feel is important to share about this book or about your work?
I don't think so. You know, it's available if people want to get it. If not, I hope these ideas help people. You know, and if people get stuck, ask a friend.
Yeah.
You know, we really do reflect each other. Maybe don't ask anybody in your family of origin to start if you're, because you've already been educated in that culture. So it'd be interesting to check with someone else. But yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because so many of my clients have asked for it. And not, like I said, not just for chronic illness, but somebody was just recently got out of an abusive relationship and she's like, I don't know who I am because I've molded myself to be who he wanted me to be.
Right.
You know, kids that graduate, people who are retiring, there's all kinds of time in life where we get confused. And so my hope is this can be a guidepost for people through any of those times.
Yes, I agree. I think it's great for that. So thank you so much for sharing everything you did today. And I will post the link to your Amazon. Is that the place to buy it? Is that?
Yeah, Amazon. And I'll send you, if people prefer independent bookstores, I will email you the link there and you can put both if you want.
I will do that. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Maureen.
Thank you. So you're going to let me go now because I want to go?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to let you go now. I'm sure you're very busy.
I'm so busy. Thank you, Destiny. It's great to see you. Okay.
Thanks for listening. If you learned something new today, consider writing it down in your phone notes or journal and make that new neural pathway light up. Better yet, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a DM on Instagram, email me, or leave a voice memo for us to play on the next show. The way you summarize your takeaways can be the perfect little soundbite that someone else might need. And lastly, leaving a review really helps others find this podcast, so please do if you found this episode helpful. And P.S., clicking subscribe ensures you'll be here for the next episode. See you then.